Chapter 2. Joe. It's mildly embarrassing to admit, after all these years, but Joe's body always needs a day or two to readjust to being in space. It reminds him of his first few times at sea as a very young man. His father had been a merchant, and the first time he brought Joe along on a trading voyage across the Mediterranean, Joe had been violently ill over the side of the ship. He'd been, 15 years old, perhaps. Impossibly young, and deeply ashamed, desperate to hide his weakness from his father. His older brother had given Joe clean water to wash his hot face afterward, only laughing at him a little bit, and taught him how to fix his gaze on the horizon line to better keep his bearings. It took a few wretched days to get the hang of it, but before long, Joe was striding the deck as nimbly as any sailor. Here and now, stepping off the shuttle into the artificial gravity of the Luna space docks, Joe doesn't feel seasick exactly, but there's a similar sense of being unmoored, struggling to find one's bearings. This space station orbits Earth's moon, which stretches out pale and gleaming outside the observation panels, their planet itself a bright curve in the distance. There are no true horizons out in the black to center him. The same stars to navigate by, yes, albeit from different angles. Joe clings onto that truth as best he can. Space is beautiful, and vast, and cold. He breathes deeply to calm the queasy tilt to his stomach. "I always somehow forget," Nikki says softly beside him, "how lovely Earth appears from out here, and how small." His eyes are rueful. Joe waves off the implicit apology. "I chose it too. It's still home." Nikki exhales, not quite a sigh. "I know." He presses a hand against the small of Joe's back, rubbing gentle circles with his thumb, and changes the subject. "Still adjusting, hmm?" "Like some green cadet on their first training run," Joe grumbles. "You'd think I'd be used to spaceflight after a century or so." "That would be a shame," Nikki says with a faint smile. "Something so wondrous should never feel commonplace." There was nothing wondrous about that damn shuttle. This is Quinn, finally joining them at the observation panels, her expression sour. "Why do we still bother with spacecraft that aren't even warp capable?" Joe gives her a tired grin. "Because it's too much of a hassle for independent vessels to get docking permissions on Earth itself. Especially these past few years," Nikki agrees. "I am glad Niall could get even this close on short notice." "Well, it's likely much closer than any of us will be able to get to New Vulcan," Quinn says with a sigh. She gazes out at the cold expanse of the moon, or perhaps past it. "We'll find a way," Nikki says. "We always do." Nikki has a way of making pronouncements like this as though his faith in such things is ironclad. Really, Joe knows, it's more that he's trying to convince himself as much as them, as though he can will it into being true. Quinn, who once spent 500 years drowning in the North Atlantic despite all their best efforts, does not call him on it. She has relearned kindness over the past couple of centuries. It was not an easy process for anyone. "In the meantime," Joe says, "let's start by finding Niall and Booker." He has to take another moment to orient himself before stepping away from the observation panels. Moon beneath him, Earth above, stars glittering in the endless expanse beyond. His stomach lurches a little, and he swallows hard, lightheaded. Then Nikki catches his elbow, bracing him gently, and Joe breathes in, breathes out, reorients himself with Nikki as his personal magnetic north, as always, and grounds himself there. "Okay," Nikki murmurs. Joe presses a fleeting kiss to his cheek, rough with 2 days' stubble. Always. They find the Scythian at the docking bay coordinates Niall sent over. The sight of that battered silver hull catches at something in Joe's chest. He has missed their little starship. She's a modified Federation scouting vessel, tiny in comparison to any of the ships they'd served on during their times in Starfleet, but sufficient for a crew of 5, plus occasional guests. With only Niall and Booker aboard, she must feel positively roomy. And more difficult to maintain, Joe thinks, with a twinge of guilt. He spots Niall perched atop a hydraulic lift, tinkering with the ship's solar panels, and calls out to her. She shrieks and descends from the lift at an alarming speed to throw herself in their general direction. Joe catches her into a hug, twirling her around for good measure. So the old bucket hasn't fallen out of the sky yet, hmm? She swats his shoulder a little too hard as he releases her. Good to see you too, asshole. Nikki is next, wrapping his arms around her warmly and murmuring something too low for Joe to make out. She gives him a tight smile in return. Quinn hasn't been comfortable with physical touch since returning to them, so she and Niall exchange quick cheek kisses instead. I really need to finish reconfiguring the solar array, Niall says, but Book should be down in the engine room if you want to say hi. You know where your stuff goes. Meet back up in like an hour for dinner. I am stuffing myself with all the non-replicated food I can stand while I've got the chance. It has been dire lately. Nikki laughs. We will have to do something about that. She smiles crookedly before retreating back up to her work on the hull. It's been nearly 5 years since they last set foot in this ship, but the sense of familiarity settles over Joe's shoulders like an old cloak as soon as he steps through the hatch. Everything on the inside looks much the same as it ever did. It's like returning to a decades-old safe house, except at least Niall and Booker have been keeping up the place in the meantime. Well, for the most part, the quarters he and Nikki share have admittedly gotten a bit dusty. You know, I somehow thought this wouldn't be a problem in space, Joe sighs, running a finger along a shelving nook with a grimace. Nikki snorts. Space dust. Joe rolls his eyes fondly and calls up the shipboard computer to send in those little cleaning droids. Nikki will probably scrub the place by hand anyway. He appreciates robots for many things, but never quite trusts them to do the job as well as he can. By the time Joe's convinced the crotchety old computer to start an off-schedule cleaning job on the newly reopened crew quarters, Booker's knocking on their door, and they exchange a round of backslapping hugs. Been quiet without you these past few years, Booker remarks, leaning back against the wall while Nikki starts unpacking their bags. They didn't bring much. They've always traveled light. And besides, they'd known they would likely return to the Scythian at some point. Joe takes a few tries to remember which storage compartment contains bedding for their empty bunk, but he gets there eventually. How's Earth? Also quiet, Joe says, tucking the fitted sheet in. But we keep busy enough. It has been good for Quinn, I think, to be grounded for a time, Nikki adds. And yes, while humanity may have pulled itself away from the brink of self-destruction, there is still plenty of work for us to do at home. People are still people, after all. Booker gives him a wry smile. Careful there, Nikki. I'm supposed to be the cynical one, remember? Nikki shrugs. It is what it is, that's all. I'm glad that we can still be of use there. Booker glances sidelong over at Joe, but refrains from commenting further, which Joe appreciates. Give them a minute to settle back in, first, before diving back into that debate. Besides, they have a new immortal to find, which takes precedence over any nebulous discussions about the future. Had any new dreams lately? Booker asks instead. I just got a rerun of the first, nothing new to add to it. Yeah, that'll happen sometimes, Joe says. I got another glimpse of that red desert, by moonlight this time. I didn't realize New Vulcan has two moons. But that's about it. And nothing at all for me or Quinn since the first, Nikki says. At least we have a planet to start with. Booker huffs out a laugh. I suppose that's as much as any of us have ever had to start. Funny that Earth's not a given anymore. Nikki hums thoughtfully, but does not comment further. Joe shakes out a blanket and suppresses a sigh. It's easy to forget, sometimes, that Booker was the first of them to express any real doubts about Starfleet. That was very early on, when he and Quinn were still cadets. Joe was on shore leave alone, Niall served on a different ship, and Nikki's medical rotation was more intensive than Joe's duties in communications. So there was a span of perhaps 24 hours where Joe was on his own in San Francisco, and he decided to swing by the academy for a family visit. "It's been a long time since we've formally served in the military," Booker remarked, when Joe asked how his first year was going. "I'm not sure I like it." Joe stretched out along the narrow couch in Booker's small room, trying to find a more comfortable position. He hadn't missed these dorms, that's for sure. "I know some of the phys ed requirements are a pain in the ass, but the academy is still a far cry from basic training. Fewer push-ups, sure, but the hierarchy feels a lot like Napoleon's army." Booker raised an eyebrow. "Ensign Jones?" "Look, it's all still very new," Joe pointed out. "Of course it's being modeled on a similar structure, at least to start with. We've got to start somewhere. And it's not like we haven't all been embedded with various armies over the centuries. Do you remember that Australian unit in 1917? "Embedded with them, yes," Booker said quietly. "For a few weeks, months even. But not..." He gestures vaguely, mouth twisting. "Starfleet may be trying to position itself as a peacekeeping and exploratory force, but I'm not so sure. Even down here, we're hearing rumors that the Romulans are trying to stir up shit in Alpha Quadrant. If it comes to open war, who do you think Earth's first line of defense is gonna be? There's a reason we're building so damn many ships right now. Isn't that why we decided to join up? To position ourselves where we can do the most good? As cogs in the United Earth war machine, is that really all we're good for now?" Booker scrubbed a hand across his face with a sigh. "I know it's not just, I mean, who doesn't want to go to space these days? And this is the best way to do it for now. The engineering track, this shit is genuinely fascinating to me, I'm gonna see it through. But it does worry me. Niall was born for command, and I know she's in her element out there, and you and Nikki are probably the most adaptable of any of us. But take it from someone who's lost his way more than once, mon frère. We should always keep our eyes open." He wasn't wrong about the rumors. He and Quinn graduated directly into the Earth-Romulan War, which dragged out for years. Joe still does believe Starfleet was the best place for them all at the time. There wouldn't have been anything they could have done to help if they'd been grounded on Earth. And they all gained valuable insights from the perspective of an interstellar conflict. But over the decades, for all the wonders they saw and joys they experienced and skills they mastered in Starfleet, it became harder to justify their place in it. The five of them were separated as often as not, scattered across the galaxies on different ships, with different missions, an issue only exacerbated by the fact that they had to regularly request transfers every few years to protect the secret of their immortality. And while the institution of Starfleet as a whole remains better than most of the governments or armies they'd seen throughout Earth's history, it's still just as susceptible to corruption and mismanagement, and Joe wearied of hearing how the ends justified the means. Sure, they've all made decisions in battle they later regretted, over the centuries. But Joe would far rather make his own mistakes than carry out shitty orders made by others. Quinn, predictably, chafed at the command structure early and often, and was the first to leave Starfleet for good. But the rest of them followed eventually. He still believes in Starfleet, and the Federation of United Planets, for the most part, even if he has no desire to serve in it again. But he and his family have always existed in the spaces between, filling in gaps, slipping through shadows. Their universe has expanded exponentially in the past 200 years. Strange, then, that they're having so much difficulty fitting into it lately. The problem, Niall says, once they've reconvened in the galley with far too much food, is that New Vulcan is probably the most closely guarded planet in the quadrant right now. I mean, founding member of the Federation loses its original home planet and becomes an endangered species. It's no surprise that security's tight, but it's freaking impenetrable. Booker swallows a mouthful of noodles and nods. Total no-fly zone for independent vessels. Only licensed Federation ships can get in or out, and even that's limited to a very short list of official transports, nearly all Starfleet. I think whatever's left of the Vulcan Science Academy still maintains a few ships of their own, but that's about it. Their interplanetary expeditions have all been grounded for the foreseeable future. Their primary focus is on reconstruction right now. Understandably so, Nikki says quietly. I am assuming transporter frequencies are restricted as well. Not that we can afford that kind of technology, but yeah, assume away. God, it would be nice if the Scythian could support a transporter, but the energy costs alone would be astronomical by their standards, let alone the infrastructure required. There are some things Joe really does miss about Starfleet. They must make some exceptions, though, Quinn says. Vulcan society may be insular, but they've never been isolationists. They helped found the Federation for a reason. And they can't rebuild a whole planet alone. There will be contractors, supply chains, even passenger transports. We'll never pass as Starfleet, but we've faked standard Federation credentials in the past. I'm not sure my forgeries will hold up to that level of security, Booker says. Not on short notice, anyway. Joe hums consideringly. It would be easier if we could find a Vulcan to vouch for us. Quinn, is there any chance? She's already shaking her head. Vulcans are longer lived than humans, but it's been well over a century since my time among them. The monastery itself was remote, its numbers relatively few. It is extremely unlikely that anyone I knew then is still alive. And our immortality remained a secret even from them. Good point. All right, any other ideas? Niall leans back in her chair, arms folded across her chest. Starfleet, we've still got a few contacts there, if any of them currently serve with Vulcans. Booker pulls out his pad, tapping across its screen. Vulcans were always relatively underrepresented in Starfleet itself, even before the disaster, but it's a possibility. I'll see if there are any still in active service. They don't necessarily have to be active, Niall says. Might be worth broadening the net to anyone who left the service in the last 5 years as well. I believe there is a Vulcan on the new flagship. What is it called? Enterprise, I think. Nikki glances to Joe for confirmation. There was quite a bit of press about them, after the attacks, but I don't recall... Joe frowns in thought. Yeah, I remember that too. I feel like we did know someone else on that ship. Well, you're right about the Vulcan crew member, Booker says, swiping the personnel file up from his pad onto the larger view screen. Commander Spock, he's first officer even, son of a member of the Vulcan High Council. Very respectable, definitely a good candidate to get us into New Vulcan, if only we actually knew him. Well, do we know anyone else on the Enterprise? Niall asks. Bring up the crew manifest. Let's start with the other officers. Booker brings up basic data files for the Enterprise's bridge crew and department heads to start. It's not classified intel, or, well, nothing beyond low-level Starfleet clearance, which they all still technically hold, since he ensured none of their access codes would ever be revoked once they left the service. There's a lot of data up on the screen now to discuss. Joe pays closer attention to the photos accompanying the files. He's always had a good eye for faces. Names are all too easy to forget, given how many people they've met over their very long lifetimes, but faces tend to stick in his memory. Crap, Niall is saying. That is a young crew. I mean, even the captain barely looks 30, if that. We might be shit out of luck here. Much of the fleet was lost at the Battle of Vulcan, Quinn points out. I believe many of the surviving cadets were fast-tracked in the aftermath. But you're right, it is unusual not to have any more seasoned members of the command crew. Joe's gaze keeps drifting back to the photo of the captain. Something about the intense blue of his eyes, the determined line of his jaw, strikes a chord in his memory. He just can't place it. The captain, James Kirk, does he look familiar to anyone else? His face was all over the news for a while, Booker says. So, yeah. Not that. Well, not only that. In the chair beside him, Nikki shifts so that his shoulder bumps lightly against Joe's. Can you dig a little deeper into his background, Booker? To Joe, he adds, I trust your memory more than my own in this. The name, perhaps, but then James is a very common name. Niall sighs, resting her chin on her fist. You know, I miss Copley sometimes. It was nice being able to outsource this kind of research. James Copley, Joe recalls, and is not surprised at her segue. Remember all those photographs he had of us? Yeah, the stalker walls, Niall says with a huff of laughter. Sure could use one of those now. See if any of these Enterprise officers turn up on it. Or any other random Vulcans, while we're at it. Maybe we should just... wait, Booker says. Joe was right. Mon Dieu, that kid. Jim. Anticipation trips up Joe's spine, like he's stumbling to the edge of some precipice. What kid? Where do we know him from? Startlingly blue eyes and a stubborn jaw, in a much younger face, and it clicks into place just as Booker says it. Tarsus. Nikki sucks in a sharp breath, and Joe grasps instinctively for his hand. Son of a bitch, Niall says with feeling. Well, I guess Jim Kirk is our way in. End of chapter 2.